kicking a ball and breaking everything in my house and going out in the backyard where I created like... You know,
welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
This episode is sponsored by Thing. The Seattle Theater Group and Sasquatch Festival founder Adam Zaks present Thing. From August 26th through the 28th at historic Fort Warden in Port Townsend, you can enjoy a vast musical lineup, including Jungle, Modest Mouse, Father John Misty, and many more. The Thing Festival features two primary stages overlooking the Puget Sound, not to mention a variety of camping and parking accommodations. You can either book a one-day or three-day pass, and kids 12 and under are free, making this an event for the whole family. Come enjoy live music, art, and beautiful Fort Warden with us. To find out all the details, visit thingnw.org. All right, welcome back to this episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast. I'm here with Sam Zett. Did I say it right, Sam? Please.
Nailed it.
Oh my gosh. See, I knew it, but I had to ask. No, just kidding. Sam, you're listed as co-founder and GM of Ballard FC. And your bio also says grew up in Wallingford, went to Ballard High, University of Puget Sound. Why don't you take over from there? So what's, Sam, why soccer? Why'd you play soccer as a kid? What got you into this sport?
You know, I only ever remember playing soccer, like, you know, from the youngest age I was kicking a ball around, whether it was kicking a ball and breaking everything in my house and going out in the backyard where I created, like, in our small backyard in Wallingford, I created a little, like, soccer training pitch with some goals and things like that. And I would set out cones and I would practice and play in my basement and set up little goals. I was just always... either just like playing for fun, but also training a lot. Like I wanted to be a pro. I wanted to be a professional soccer player. So I was always working on that.
And so let me interrupt you. As a kid, yeah. Who'd you look up to as a kid?
You know, well, my dad coached me. He was my first coach and he coached me until I was 11. So I had that kind of, but then in terms of like pro players that I was watching, you know, I remember having this poster on my wall for a player named Ruud van Nistelrooy. He's a Dutch player who played for Manchester United. He was a striker. And I have no idea why. You know, it's like one of those things, you're a five-year-old kid and you're whatever, watching a you know, Premier League game up on the TV and you just pick that guy with the red jersey and you go, that's my player, Ruud van Nistelrooy. And but I like, you know, that's kind of was my entry point into soccer, right? It was, you know, you had, you know, Fox Soccer Channel, which would play games every so often. And I would watch and for some reason I got attracted to Manchester United. I'm no longer a Manchester United fan, by the way, Liverpool now. So,
All right.
But I just got into it and I was just a total, just, you know, that was like everything I wanted to do was play soccer, whether it was, you know, play for my club team or train by myself or play with my friends on the, you know, after school. I was just like so into it. So I played, I did, you know, I had other hobbies. I, you know, played music and did some other things, but soccer was always kind of the thing for me. It was my main driving force. And so I knew I wanted to play in college and I wanted to see how far I could go with the game after college and see where that could take me. And I had my first coaching experience when I was about like 14 or 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coaching, you know, 7 and 8 year olds for a summer camp. And I thought, man, this is so fun. Like, it's so rewarding. It's difficult. It's challenging because these kids are running around like crazy. But when I had this moment where you like, you can teach a kid, you know, you're coaching a player and they're struggling with confidence and they're trying to learn. And finally, when they have that breakthrough moment and they're like, wow, I can do this now. There was something so rewarding to me to like be able to, it's not just like teaching how to kick a ball into a goal, but it's like teaching how to believe in yourself and how to find confidence and how to overcome adversity. And like, you know, like I was like, wow, this is something I want to do for the rest of my life. So at that moment I was like, I think I want to be a soccer coach after I finish playing. And so kind of what drove me through college and beyond was to pursue playing to the furthest point I could, but all the while kind of work on my coaching to try to be a full-time coach after I finished playing. And so I went to University of Puget Sound where I studied exercise science, which I was also wanting to see, hey, maybe there's like some strength and conditioning, personal training components to my life that I could, you know, start working on. So I studied exercise science. I played soccer at the University of Puget Sound, had an awesome time. I was a captain by my senior year. You know, we were a successful team on the field. You know, we won a conference championship, which was really exciting. Got to compete in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, being a Division III player, it is pretty challenging to play professionally because, you know, you've got Division One college athletes, Division Two, which automatically on their resume, you know, is going to look like a better player. And so, you know, it was a difficult challenge for me to play at the professional level, but I was able to, you know, go and play a few places, including, you know, for a small team in the south of Spain for 4 months. I ended up coming home and then playing for the Tacoma Stars, which is a professional indoor soccer for 2 years. And bounced around at a lot of different semi-professional clubs like AFC Ann Arbor in Michigan, the Kitsap Pumas here in, which were in no longer a club. They're defunct now, but they were in Bremerton, Washington, and a few other clubs. So I kind of had, in a span of almost like 3 or 4 years after I finished college, had played for like 6 or 7 different teams for little 4 month stints. But it was a lot of, you know, moving around, playing the game, chasing it. But I got to meet a ton of amazing people, make friends from around the world, learn a lot about myself, about soccer, about community. And I think all that while playing for these different teams and traveling around, I thought, why doesn't Ballard and even more generally Seattle have a club at this grassroots community level? Why don't we have a team for 500 to 1,000 people to come out on a Friday and get together? And it's like, with the goal of it being like, you walk into the stadium and it's your neighbor from a couple of years ago who you see. And it's like, it's just like a small, it's more accessible, it's more reachable. And ultimately, you know, as a fan, you get to be right there on the field level. You get to get an autograph with the picture with the player after the game. The kids get to run onto the field after the game. There's just something about that small community feel where I got to see that in some different places and think, I would love to do something like this for, you know, in our community when I can at some point. So I was like, maybe in 30 or 40 years when I'm a lot more settled down, I'll start a club like that. And then I'm working full time for the Sounders and the camps and clinics program, you know, helping to put that all together. And I've done a lot of, you know, other things with my coaching licenses and stuff. And it just, the time was right, you know, when COVID hit, where I was like, we are going to need community more than ever when we can come out of this. So this was like, you know, May of 2020. Okay. And I was like, the time is now to start working on this so that when we can come out of COVID, we can have something to bring community together, something super positive for people to look forward to, for kids to be able to get that childhood experience back of being, you know. And I just, that was like inspiring me to kind of ramp things up. So I got together with Lamar Nagel, one of my friends from the Tacoma Stars, played for the Seattle Sounders for years, super experienced professional soccer player who's played at the highest level and a really great guy, smart guy. And it's like, hey, I have this idea. What do you think? Like, what, you want to do this thing? And he immediately was like, yes, let's do it, which was like a huge piece to galvanize the project. Okay. So we got working on it. We started working on facility and we started working on with the league and trying to put all like the kind of bigger picture components together. And
let me pause you because I told you on the phone, I know next to nothing. Let's just assume nothing because it'll be easier. Is I don't understand the leagues in soccer. So what I believe, this is what I believe to be correct, in you feel free to correct me, but the Premier League is probably considered the highest league of quality, a caliber of soccer in the world. Would that be accurate, or is it the Champions League? Which one? It's
that's a good question. So the Premier League would be considered the highest quality individual league. The Champions League takes the best teams from England, Germany, Spain, France, right? Like, and puts them all together.
Okay.
But it's,
then,
it's, yeah.
Okay, so then Major League Soccer at the U.S. level is not at that overall caliber of play. Would that, is that accurate, or am I out of date information now? Or it's getting better, I believe.
No, it's definitely accurate in general. I mean, it's getting better for sure. Okay. But it's not, you know, it's not there yet. But it's certainly every year is getting a little bit better.
So where I get confused is when I hear of a player, Beckham, was playing. Who is he playing for back in the,
you know, Manchester United, and then
Manchester United,
and then Real Madrid.
Okay, and then he comes to the Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. You know, does he still do those teams? Does, let's say, Real Madrid, do they still have his rights for that other league? I don't understand how these guys are moving around. I guess that's where I'm getting confused, because then they're playing in the World Cup.
Do you have like 4 or 5 hours now? Because, you know, it is incredible. I mean, because I could explain, you know, there's like the way the rest of the world works in terms of players and their rights and their contracts. And then, you know, a team can, so say you're on a 3-year contract, right, with Real Madrid, and Manchester United says, well, we want Scott, but he still has 2 years left on his contract. Well, Manchester United will say, well, you owe us $30 million and you can basically sign him now. We'll you know, you have the rights to sign him to a new contract yourselves. And they say, okay, we'll pay that fee, right? So that happens in these European systems. But where it gets nuanced is with the MLS. The MLS is a single entity structure, just like, you know, like the NFL and the MLB, right? So the MLS operates almost as its own, as just that one entity. So if the Sounders want a player and he you know, it's the same kind of thing, a transfer, the transfer actually has to go through, I don't even know the ins and outs, but it has to go through like the league, but then the player goes to the Sounders, and the MLS has probably 75,000 pages of rules about how all the transfer of money goes. And it's really complicated, but I guess we aren't really as part of that kind of like global ecosystem of soccer.
Okay.
As much as, you know, you expect.
So. All right. So your league, so you're in the USL2, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now what I'm reading is I'm seeing the words, let me see, what did I see here? They can still maintain their college eligibility. Kids could play and still maintain college eligibility.
Yes.
And then, are players being paid on your team?
No. And they can't be, because of college eligibility. So our league exists to provide college players with a three month training and playing, like part of their development, right? So the college players have a 3-month season in the fall from, you know, middle of August through early November or mid November. And then they break for the winter, and then they come back and they do a modified spring season of about 3 months. But then they don't have anything to do. There's no formal, you know, training for them for the entire summer. So our league provides a high quality, high level training and development opportunity for those players to get done with their spring in the college, join us for the summer, and then go back to their college in the fall. And it allows them to continue to develop and also have a platform to where, you know, professional scouts are watching these games, are coming to these games, taking a look at these players and seeing, is that somebody we might want to sign to a professional contract at some point?
Okay, so actually this makes a lot of sense to me, because this year I'm the PA announcer for the Wenatchee Apple Sox baseball team in the West Coast League, which is a collegiate, kids are playing, you know, University of Washington ball players, Oregon, kids from all across the U.S. are coming to these teams in Wenatchee or Port Angeles, Bremerton, and all that, and they are being exposed to baseball at 6 days a week, like they do in the minors or the majors, right? So exposing them to how the game is played at the professional level, because at college level, they're playing twice a week. They're not playing at this level. So then a coach, let's just say it's a kid from UPS, because you're involved with UPS. UPS says they have a pitcher that needs to work on his control, let's say, and you send him to Wenatchee. And Wenatchee's job for the summer is to use this kid and help him on with that facet of his game. Is Ballard FC being asked by these colleges that your players are playing from, hey, can you help him work on his defense Or is it just they get to play more, they're getting more hours of play?
Mostly the latter. Okay. There's not, it's, I think it's part of the difference there is like difference in sports, you know, like just the difference between baseball and soccer. Like it's not as much, it's like specifically like you need to work on free kicks or you need to work on your left foot. And so you need a coach to tell you, like, it just doesn't work like that in the sport okay. as much, but we do have, you know, college coaches who will email or call and say, hey, I have this player who I think would be a great fit for you. And here's his video and here's why we think you should take him. And, you know, our coaching staff does that type of recruitment to put together a roster. So okay. we do have predominantly college players, but we also balance that out with some players who are out of college that provide mm-hmm. some more, you know, quality on the field because of their experience, but also some of that veteran leadership in the locker room to really help kind of guide the younger players and show them the way.
Okay.
And then at the other side of it, we also have some younger players. Like we have a senior in high school who, you know, like, and some other, you know, younger players who are like freshmen in college who are, you know, only 17, 18, 19 years old, who this is a great opportunity for them to play with mostly 22, 23, 24 year olds and get that kind of like extra leg okay. up of development because they're competing in, you know, with a higher level of player.
All right. Okay. So you're in the USL League 2. Is there a USL League 1?
There is.
Okay. So what is the USL? How about yeah. we start with that?
So the USL is, I guess before I explain what the USL is, the US soccer pyramid. Right. There's okay. a first division of the pyramid at the top. That's the MLS. It's what the Sounders okay. and the Timbers all play in. And it's just the MLS up there in the first division.
Okay.
Then there's a second division of the US soccer pyramid. It's fully professional. The players are paid. They're like teams like if you've heard of Sacramento Republic or, you know, Louisville, like they're teams that are not quite big enough markets usually for mm-hmm. the MLS, but do a really good job. They get 10,000 or so fans out. All their players are paid. It's like a great organization. It's that second division.
Okay.
That's called the USL Championship.
Okay.
Then there's the third division, which is USL League One. So it's similar to the USL Championship, but kind of tamper it down to around 5,000 fans a game. Markets like there's a team called Union Omaha, FC Tucson, okay. so kind of even slightly smaller markets than that USL Championship.
Okay.
Those, it's also fully professional. Players are paid. That's their career. That's what they're there to do.
Okay.
At the fourth division, it's us at the USL League 2. And mm-hmm. we are, the league uses the term pre-professional. So it's players who all are striving to be professional players. They are mostly NCAA players. And the NCAA rules say that if you play, if you're, you know, to maintain college eligibility, you cannot be paid to play the sport. There's new, you know, NIL rules, which allow you to benefit from your name and your image and your likeness, mm-hmm. but you cannot be paid a contract. Ballard FC cannot pay a player to come play for the club because it would break NCAA rules. It would also break the league rules. USL League 2 has rules that don't allow okay. that either.
All right. So, how did you, going back now to your story, sorry, because I hijacked that, but I needed some context because totally. I was trying to figure out where this all stacks. So COVID, you're working for the Sounders. You think community is important. Do you want to put together a team? What, took you an afternoon? Super easy to do. I mean, you just called the league up and said, I want to put a team. And they said, sure, go ahead, do what you need. No, I mean, how was this process? What was the journey like from the idea to, you know, the actual first game, first match?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely took a lot. It took a lot of work, but even before all that, it took a lot of like thought and strategizing and crafting and really bothering my friends and my fiance and bugging them constantly about, what about this? What would that work? What do you think about that? And them saying, shut up, we just want to watch TV. So I
have an important question. Your fiance, are you married now?
Married. We'll be married in September.
Okay. So it didn't ruin the relationship. So awesome.
No, if anything, okay. it's even made it stronger. She's
awesome.
Helps okay. out with some of our marketing. She's at every game. She also cool. opened a business right at the same time. And I help her a bit with her cafe. So
no stress at all.
Yeah. No stress in our house. No, okay. sir. Okay. But So I was thinking about this for probably at least like a year and a half or more. Like, what would the budget be? Where would we play? What, like, how would we market this? How would we put a team together? Who would coach it? How would they coach it? Like, really kind of thinking through all of those, like, things. And just thinking about it. I wasn't really putting it down on paper, building spreadsheets yet, or, like, talking to anybody about working with me. It was mostly just, like I said, bothering my friends, bothering my fiance, and thinking about it. And then that's when I think in COVID where I, like, took this, like, just thinking about it, this pipe dream idea, and was like, I'm gonna like put some more thought and like detail into this, into what this could be. Started okay. like working on some spreadsheets of like, what would a budget be? What would it take to make this thing happen? Because the reality is, like, to make something special, you do need to be able to fund it, right? So how would we fund this? Like, that's an important question. How are we gonna pay for a facility? How are we gonna pay for coaches and keeping the lights on and people and all of that, right? So it's putting together a plan of like, how can we turn this idea of a soccer team into a business? Because to me, it's a really important part of this. It's not everything, but it's really important that this is a sustainable business, because it can't be something that relies on people for 1 or 2 years going way, way above and beyond and stretching themselves thin, because then when you lose those people in a couple of years, what are you left with, right? So it has to operate as a sustainable business so that in 10 years, Ballard FC is even better than it was in year one, and can continue on and be here for decades, right? So that was kind of what I was first thinking about in early COVID, was like, okay, what does the business of this look like? How does it operate sustainably? And then it was contacting Seattle Parks about the use of InterBay Stadium, because InterBay Stadium is a beautiful, you know, 1,200 seat capacity stadium in the heart of Seattle, soccer specific, which means no football lines, which is important for me as a soccer player, but also as a soccer fan, watching a game on a soccer specific pitch is really important. You know, looking into how to have a beer garden, you know, and how to make the game day experience fun and memorable and lively. And so that's what I was working on, you know, solo for the first bit, and then, you know, approached Lamar, and Lamar brings a ton of experience in the soccer side of it. So how are we going to build a roster? Who's going to be our coach? How are we going to be successful on the field? Lamar also brings experience with like community impact, social impact. So what are some of the ways that we can benefit the community and provide an experience that is, you know, brings people together and inspires kids and has a net positive impact on the community, right? And then things really galvanized when we were introduced to our third co-founder, Chris Kamer. And Chris is a Ballard High School graduate as well, a bit older than myself. And he, you know, super smart Yale graduate, worked at the intersection of soccer and social impact for 10 years, traveling around the world, working for, you know, nonprofits, specifically using soccer to benefit communities. And just brought a huge wealth of knowledge on, again, the social impact space, but even more so kind of on the startup space and like budgeting and, you know, accounting and finance, you know, raising money and sponsorship. So that when Chris came on board, things really kind of, you know, picked up and got a lot more organized. And Chris really helped to kind of take us to the next level as an organization. And then from there, it's just like was a lot of work on the marketing and the game day operations side to make sure we're all set and ready to go. But it's been good.
I have lots of questions. Game day. How many people does it take to put on a game day?
About 30.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, more. Actually, I'm not even thinking about vendors and contractors. It's probably 50.
Wow, that's a lot of folks. That's more than I anticipated you were saying. Okay.
Well, that's to do it the way we want to do it, which is like we want to do it. We want to do a really good job. Like we want it to be, we want to make sure that there isn't a huge line to get tickets scanned. So instead of having one person scanning people's tickets, we do three. We don't need to do three, but that way someone gets into the stadium in 30 seconds instead of 10 minutes, right? And we want to have the beer lines be really short. So we have three beer lines instead of one. We, you know, have three food options. And so we stretch it out so that people have a seamless experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Let's talk about building a roster and putting together coaches and all of that. Was that a simple process? How did you, for example, your head coach, how did you find that individual?
So our head coach actually reached out to us. We really? Had, we were in like the beginning stages of starting to explore coaching options in like December, and we had launched, and our head coach reached out to us and said, his name's Jason Farrell, and he lives in Ballard and has played for the Sounders back in the day, played for the Columbus Crew in the MLS, played for the University of Washington, you know, for college and in Seattle Pacific mm-hmm. University. He had coached, you know, had been at high level, like particularly in the youth game for over 20 years coaching. Super experienced coach, great reputation, great person. He reached out to us and said, I'd love to be involved in this project. And I would love to, you know, chat more with you about it. And so him and I got a beer and hit it off, you know, from our first beer. And I thought he just seems like the right fit. And we had more, you know, interviews and conversations, and it just became super clear, super fast that Jason was going to be just the right fit to be our head coach. And he has done a tremendous job.
Was the city easy to work with when it came to getting, oh, I love that smirk on your face. Sorry, folks.
Yes.
He is shaking his head. No. And I'm
No. I'm joking.
I know. No. I'm serious. Was the city easy to work with? Because these parks are there for, I mean, when you cross into commercial, do the city understand that, or how did that experience happen?
So parks is, so Inter Bay Stadium is, operated by Seattle Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. Seattle Pacific University is a long-term tenant of Inter Bay Stadium. So they also have some, you know, some say in it all.
Right.
But ultimately, like, scheduling the stadium goes through Seattle Parks. They were super helpful with, you know, through the process when I was, you know, working on getting dates and then scheduling with the league and scheduling with our other teams and, you know, pulling permits and all of that was, you know, helping at every step of the way to help make it happen. You know, it's not a perfect process. You know, there's certainly some things that could be improved upon to make it a little easier, but also make it just a little more, you know, turnkey in some ways. But mm-hmm. in general, you know, they've been a great partner, and we're really grateful that, like, we're really grateful first that there is a stadium like Inter Bay in the heart of our city. You know, that's not normal. You know, not all cities have this beautiful 1,000-seat capacity soccer-specific stadium right in the heart of the city. A lot of teams have to go. A lot of teams in our league have to play at a high school, and mm-hmm. at high schools, they don't allow alcohol sales. They also have football lines, and the turf is outdated. And we get to play on a field that doesn't have any of those issues. And it's because Seattle Parks and Recreation do a great job of maintaining the facility. And so we're really grateful, you know, to be able to have this facility. And it was like the first contingency for Ballard FC to happen was we needed to make sure we have a good facility. And Inter Bay is that facility for us.
Well, it would be nice, you know, from a playing standpoint, playing on an appropriate field marked appropriately is always helpful. I'm a baseball fan, and so when you watch baseball and they're playing on a football field and you got the lines, it's confusing to follow either sport when it's mixed up. So I totally. Can imagine here's the same sort of challenge. And beer sales, A, fans like it, and B, it's a good, nice source of revenue. So helps like you want this to be a sustainable business that helps contribute to that.
Well, actually, for us, beer sales are not a source of revenue because Inter Bay is a park, you know, Seattle Parks, and you have to be the beer garden has to benefit a nonprofit organization is the Seattle Parks
and Recreation
the Liquor Control Board rules. So our beer garden benefits the Rubens Brews Foundation, which does amazing work, particularly with their Mosaic Brewers Collective, to bring folks in from underserved communities into the brewing industry, which has been a predominantly white and male industry. So we're super stoked about being able to, you know, help raise money through the beer garden for the Rubens Brews Foundation. But it's more of an experiential thing for us of providing a good experience than it is a moneymaker. But for a lot of folks, it does exist as a moneymaker.
But at the same time, though, I mean, there's a benefit that you're, A, it's for the experience for the fans, but B, you're helping a nonprofit that's bringing some diversity into an industry. That's awesome. Okay. How was it? So when you approached USL, what was that process like?
So I had first gotten introduced. So I told somebody at the, at another team, that's another USL 2 club, that I was interested in doing this, and I was picking their brain, and I was, you know, kind of, they were a mentor for me as I was kind of thinking about starting the club and helping, providing resources and guides on how to, you know, really, really important stuff to help me get started. And they sent an introduction over to the league. And in my initial call, I just kind of put together, you know, this is what I think this could look like and how it would work. And then there's a formal process of, you know, putting together an expansion application and, you know, all of that, including a sample, you know, budget and P&L and, you know, information about your venue and your marketing plan. And they want to like make sure that you're coming into this with a thoughtful plan. And then also they provide guidance along the whole way of, actually, we recommend you try doing this way. And like, they were super helpful in not only like, they weren't just reviewing all of our materials, but like going through each item with us and helping guide us on best practices. So they took to our bid, our expansion bid, really well. It was like, when I kind of explained the vision, they were like, yes, this is great. Because what we're doing that's different from a lot of other teams in the country is we are in a city. We're representing a neighborhood within a city. So we're not just Seattle FC instead of Seattle Sounders or North Seattle FC. We went as hyper-local as possible with Ballard FC. That's our club. And most teams in the USL 2 or even in lower, you know, other divisions, they'll kind of take on just representing, again, like the whole city and being like, you know, Seattle United Football Club or something like that. Like, if you get what I'm trying to say, like not hyper-localizing it. And so the USL was like, this is really fascinating. We don't have a club that represents a neighborhood within a city. We only have clubs that just represent cities. And so they thought it was really interesting. And it's something that we feel like could be more common, is that it has to extend beyond Seattle, that there are neighborhoods or communities within cities that have pride of place just the way cities do, right? Like, people support the Seahawks and the Sounders and the Mariners because they love those sports. You know, people support the Storm and the Kraken because they love basketball and they love hockey, right? They love watching those sports. But even more so, I think people love to celebrate the pride in their city or their region or their area, right? Like, I'm celebrating my pride in my community. Now, why can't that also extend lower to our neighborhoods, our grassroots communities, and especially Ballard, which has a history and a pride of place and a tradition that has its own, you know, history to it, its own pride that can warrant celebrating itself through a team. So that was our pitch. Like, we love this neighborhood. This neighborhood loves this neighborhood. The community loves Ballard, and like, people want to rep that. So we're going to give them a team to celebrate that pride. And the league helped us out the whole way.
So you mentioned an expansion. You applied for expansion. You're in the Northwest Division.
That's right.
How many teams are in the Northwest Division?
Six.
Are you the newest entry into the division?
Actually, no. We were going to be. And then a team in Olympia called Olytown FC joined the league just after us. And so us and Olytown FC are the two newest additions. We came in just around the same time. Yeah.
So I'm reading. So this is confusing to me. Lane United Football Club. I have no idea. Where's Lane? Where is that team? Lane United.
So Lane County is in Oregon. It's Eugene. So they play out of Eugene in Eugene.
Okay. And then there's the Oregon Valley Football Alliance.
Yeah, they are in Albany, Oregon, which is like Albany and Corvallis. So they're down there. That's a they have like a youth club system. Mm-hmm. So and then they this is like their U23 team of their youth club. But they're and based
PDX. I'm guessing is Portland.
Yeah, you got that right.
And then the two teams here in Washington are the Olytown and who's Capital FC?
They're based out of Salem.
Salem. Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Oregon got the jump here on us and Washington's going to catch up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this league has fluctuated a lot over the years and it's something that we hope we can help change is like providing some more stability and consistency. You know, there used to be a team called Kitsap Pumas out of Bremerton. There was a team, there were other teams in this league. So Washington has had teams and Washington obviously has a storied soccer culture and history, but for whatever reason, this division in the league hasn't seen as much consistency out of the Washington teams. And we hope that we can kind of help provide that stability and consistency.
So when we talked earlier, and we'd never follow a great train of thought here. We're always scattered right on the show. When we talked earlier, you mentioned that playoffs are coming in the near future. At the time of this recording, we haven't hit the playoffs yet. And Ballard FC hopes to make the playoffs. And you mentioned that there's 140 teams. That was mind-blowing to me.
I think it's actually like 120.
Okay, well, sorry. Okay, my mind's up.
I might have inflated it.
No, 120, there's 120 teams at this caliber level of play across the United States, right?
There's actually more because there's another league.
Oh. What is the other league we haven't referenced?
The other league is called the NPSL, National Premier Soccer League, and they exist in the fourth division as well. But their standards are a little bit lower. So certain things like, game day experience and travel and press box, like things that make a club more, I don't know, but it also helps for clubs that don't quite have maybe as much of a budget and it's easier lower barrier of entry. But anyway, our league has the USL League 2 has 120 clubs and there's other clubs as well. But yeah.
So the Northwest seems a little light with six teams. That just seems a little light for the area that we're in. Where is this league heavily concentrated in? Big in California? Is it?
There is, the Southwest Division, which is mostly California, has nine teams. Okay. I would say the East Coast as well as the Midwest. Like there's a whole division for the state of Michigan with like eight teams in it, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it is a bit like regional. It's hard to say. I wouldn't know why certain regions. It's just, it's one of those things too where like word gets out. And I actually think because we've come into the league and people are looking at us and we're doing a decent job, off the field with the organization, like other folks we get messages often. Like we've had at least three or four groups reach out saying, we're thinking about starting a USL 2 team. Could you give us some advice? So, I think that will help spur more groups coming into the Northwest Division. And I wouldn't be surprised if by 2024, if there were eight or nine teams in our division.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I would think that, these are all Western Washington or in Oregon, Western side of the state. I would think that Eastern Washington could certainly support teams. I would think some places in Eastern Oregon, not as many in Eastern Oregon than Eastern Washington, but yeah, I could see how this would be a great, say Wenatchee, for example, or Ellensburg, maybe it's a little small, maybe, but Yakima.
Wenatchee had a team for a while called, the Wenatchee Reds.
Maybe.
But
I've already lived in Wenatchee for
not
five
at
years,
this
so.
Level, but okay. there are some teams out there, but it's like there's a jump that there's a team called Spokane Shadow, right? Like out of Spokane, there's a team in Bellingham. Bellingham Hammers. There's a team in Yakima. It's the Yakima Reds, actually. Okay. So they're teams, but like there's a big jump to go from the league that they're playing in to the USL, this national league. Okay. So it's about like if teams like that could make the jump or not.
So, coach approaches you, says, hey, I'd like to be involved. You guys sit down, interview. It seems like a good fit. You get your coach put in place. What was it like going out and recruiting the roster?
Well, I had done a little bit of pre-recruiting, but really not much at all. So it was like really the head coach, Jason, and mostly Jason. And then, you know, I helped him a little bit and we would kind of work together a little bit on recruiting. But a lot of it was kind of getting in contact with college coaches and then also just kind of taking a look at the local college players. So, you know, Seattle University, SPU, UW, you know, and then also looking at players who were from Seattle and had gone to play college elsewhere and kind of how they're doing in their path. And then it was also fielding a lot of emails and texts and phone calls from players saying, hey, I'd love to play for Ballard FC this summer, and taking a look at their film and resume and all that stuff. The final step to it was hosting open tryouts where we had over 200 players register to sign up. Actually, I'm sorry, it was 150 players register and come to tryouts across three. We had three sessions with 50 players each and saw some great players. We ended up, signing four players from the tryout system to our roster of 30. So, you know, it was mostly a recruited roster, but then we also wanted to make sure that we had open tryouts for anybody who, you know, didn't go through the normal kind of recruiting system.
Okay. First game day. How much fun was that for you to see this thing?
It was surreal. It was truly pretty incredible. You know, the weather, the day, May 21st, we had had, you know, a horrible spring of rain and crappy weather. And then all of a sudden on May 21st, the sun comes out. It was 70 degrees.
Oh, that was the one day. No, just kidding.
I mean, there was something actually kind of special about it, that we had gone from such crappy weather to this beautiful day where like people were like, in a good mood because they were at the first Ballard FC game and it was exciting and, oh, this is such a fun, cool thing. But then also, and we've got this unbelievable weather we haven't had in so long. This is the best day we've had since last summer. So it just was like a beautiful day. The energy in the stadium was electric. Like, it was so positive. People were so, I kept getting comments from folks about like, just how like nice, like everyone was being just so nice and so positive and so generous. Like, no one was standing in the aisleways. And then if someone asked someone, hey, could you step out? Like, everyone was just very conscious and thoughtful of each other and was holding doors for people. And like, there was just like this positivity and community energy in the stadium that was exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to give people a reason to be, I mean, happy, but like grateful for their community and want to like, feel some pride in that. And it felt like it was happening. And so, you know, had a moment. There was obviously on my end too, a ton of logistics, and my walkie talkie was constantly buzzing with, hey, we've got a issue here. We've got to need another garbage can there. And the ball went over the fence there and like, you know, all that stuff. But it was such a positive day. And it also didn't hurt that we won 5-1. So, that was cool.
Going to be my next question. Okay, so you won 5-1. So who scored the first goal in franchise history?
The first goal in franchise history. Oh, my God. I remember. Oh, it was Declan McGlynn. He is he's a number 22. He's a Seattle U player. Really, you know, from Kirkland, Washington, and it was a free kick. So he got fouled around 20, 22 yards out of the, you know, away from the goal, and he sets the ball down for a free kick. And if you know soccer well enough to know, like, there's like a, you know, five players kind of line up to block the ball. About they're allowed.
That's what I've seen on Ted Lasso. So okay, that's what I know.
Perfect. So it's a Ted Lasso style free kick. You know, stadium is watching with bated breath because it's like 35th minute into the game. It was kind of an even game until that point. He steps up, perfectly strikes the ball up and over the wall of players. So there's like five or six of the players in the other team lined up to block the ball. The goalkeeper's on kind of the other side of that on the goal line. So it goes perfectly up and over the wall, comes down into the side net of the goal. Goalkeeper can't quite get over in time. And the stadium just erupted with energy and cheering. And it was special. It was an amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah,
all right.
It was a great way to kick off the first goal in club history.
Okay. So you won 5-1. How many matches have you played this season so far?
Six league matches and one friendly.
Six league. And what is your current, at the time of this recording, what is your team's record?
We are 4 wins and 2 draws, no losses.
That seems better than I would expect a expansion team, if you will. In my world, you know, expansion teams are a little different than what you're doing, but that's a great record to start with, 4-0-2. Where are the other teams in the Northwest Division?
So the way soccer, like the league standings system works is you get 3 points for a win and 1 point for a draw, you know, 0 points for a loss, right? So we are tied on points with Capital FC, that's a team out of Salem. They have one more game played and that game is a loss. So they are 4 wins, 1 loss, and 2 draws. So we each have 14 points. The next, there's two teams that are tied for third place. They both have 7 points. So there's actually a nice gap right now between us and Capital and the rest of the league. And so our goal is to just keep that gap getting bigger and bigger and then qualify for playoffs. And the nice thing is the top two teams in our division qualify for playoffs. So, you know, so long as we win a few more games and, you know, keep things, especially against those third place teams, which are OVF Alliance, who we play this Friday, and PDX FC, who we play this Sunday, we should be in a good spot to qualify for playoffs. But there's obviously a lot of games ahead, and it's a very competitive division, and so we have a lot of work to do to secure that playoff spot.
Because the league has so many teams, how far might you have to travel for the playoffs? Would you play, if the season ended right now and it was you and Capital, would you have to play each other, or would you have to go out of the Northwest Division?
Well, hopefully how does
the playoffs work?
Yeah, our hope is that, so you have like the Western Conference, right? So there's the three divisions in the Western Conference, and 8 teams out of those three divisions qualify for playoffs. And so you're competing to be the Western Conference champion and then go to a 4-team, you know, there's 4 conferences. So the winner of each conference play each other in a national semifinal and then a national final. And so our goal, you know, we would potentially host a couple playoff games and then maybe travel to California or Colorado or Utah to try to win the Western Conference. And then the national semifinals and finals could be anywhere. I mean, they could be in Florida. They could be in, you know, Vermont. I don't know. They could be anywhere.
How is that determined?
It is determined actually subjectively. The league chooses based on quality of performance on the field as a factor, but there's other factors like, you know, how good of a host of a game are you? What's the quality of your broadcast? What's the quality of your match day experience? Do you have the right facility? Like, they're looking at all factors to make sure whoever's hosting playoffs are going to do a good job.
Okay. You bring up broadcast. How is Ballard FC broadcasting their matches?
We stream our games on a platform called 11 Sports, and then we embed that stream on our website. So if you just go to goballardfc.com on every match day, you can watch the broadcast for free.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very cool. How well has that been received?
It's good. You know, I'll be honest and say the broadcast hasn't been at the level I wanted it to. We've had some issues with internet, with this streaming partner, with Interbay Stadium just being kind of a funky stadium to broadcast out of. So I'd give us like a B- on the quality of our broadcast. And we have a lot of room to grow, and we are going to make some steps both this year and next year to really improve that quality. But I think it's been received well. We've had great viewership numbers. You know, we've had, I think our home opener had a total like 8,000 viewers
That's great.
And then since then, we kind of plateau for the rest of our games at around 4,000. So it's definitely
still a really good audience.
Yeah. No, we're excited about it. We know that if we had a better quality broadcast, there's more we could do with it. But we're working on that. That's a big part of what we want to do.
Well, it's your first season. Come on. You gotta have something to work on for season two.
That's
right?
True.
I mean, you just can't have it all dialed in.
That's fair.
Sponsorships, community support, all of this. So what was it like when you took this idea to the public? Did you go try to, like, I see Ruben's Brews prominently on the header of the site.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. That's did just because I like Ruben? Beer. I just decided to.
I know. That's, but look, there's lots of great beers in the Seattle area. And did you approach Ruben's Brews? And what was that like? I mean, were they happy to jump on board a new unproven enterprise? Was the community thrilled by this?
Yeah. The community support and response was above and beyond our expectations.
Okay.
Both from like the fan support, businesses wanting to be involved. It was bigger and faster than we ever thought. So.
Right. Okay. That's awesome.
It was really cool. It was amazing. And Ruben's, we approached about a sponsorship. Felt right. Their owner is English, huge soccer fan, big Tottenham supporter. Ruben's is just a community staple in Ballard. It's fantastic beer, but also just like a really great place to be on any given day to hang out and get together with community. And we just felt like they were the perfect partner. And we approached them about just any level of sponsorship. And they, you know, were like, well, we want to be the title sponsors. Let's make it happen. And so we made it happen. And they've been an amazing, amazing partner for us. There's so much more to it than just like putting their logo on a jersey. We host events there. It's a true partnership. That is really what our club is about. And we're really grateful to have such a great partner in them. And they do such amazing work to make our community a more vibrant and exciting place to live. And so it's been fun partnering together.
I think that's awesome. And I hope what I'm about to say goes over with the spirit that I intend it to. But I am really happy to hear that the Ballard Driving School is involved.
Yeah. Well, if you come to a game and you see the Ballard Driving Academy sign and you type in the little, you know, little URL that we put on there, you know, that's just a little Easter egg for the folks who know.
I love that. No, I'm looking at your sponsors and who's WN? You got a round circle with a WN on it. I don't recognize that logo.
They're Western Neon. Hey, okay. I'm really sorry, Scott. I actually have a 4:30 all staff meeting.
Well, we're going to cut this off to let you go. I'm thrilled that you guys are doing this. I know nothing about the sport other than, like I told you on the phone really fast, was that Ted Lasso. But I'm excited that I'm learning more and talking to you. I'd love to have you come back on and talk to us. We're going to let this one go and cut off. Sam, you've been a great guest. Thank you for making the time. I wish you guys all the success this season and future years. And we'll put a bunch of links in the show notes so people can find out more about Ballard FC. And I encourage you guys to get out and go watch a match.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on, Scott.
Of course.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast.